There's this vacant lot on the west side of Chicago. It's about a half dozen miles from Chicago's downtown, what we call the Loop. And this lot is huge.
This lot looks to me like it's about a full city block. Like it's a big,
big
lot.
It's a big lot.
That's Gladys Woodson and Jacqueline Rodney, who live nearby.
And it's pretty overgrown. Like there's full-size trees, there's like prairie grass. So what did it look like when he was operating?
It was a mess. It was a mess. That's the best I can say for it.
I first started visiting this lot, which is in a neighborhood called North Lawndale, after hearing a story about something that happened here.
At first, he had big 18-wheelers lined up. You know, I just thought, well, hey, somebody just parking their trucks in there. To a guy say, Miss Woodson, come down, look at this. Do you know somebody's dumping over in that lot?
I've been reporting in Chicago for more than a decade, and I've reported all kinds of stories about the built environment, about secret tunnels hidden underneath the Loop, and about how you replace a train bridge while the train is still running. I've also reported on housing discrimination and predatory lending. So, stories about all of the remarkable stuff that gets built in Chicago, but also about how it gets built, and about all of the foul and crooked things that people will do when they think nobody's looking. And so the story of what happened on this lot, the story I want to tell you, stunned me despite everything I already knew about Chicago, about how corrupt and ruthless it can be, about how stark the divisions are between black and white, rich and poor, between the people who hoard power and the people who will fight for their fair share.
Anytime you see anybody drive over in a vacant lot in a limo, you know it's no good.
This story is about a giant illegal dump, six stories high.
It was huge mountains, concrete, garbage.
Built from the broken pieces of a city in the midst of a so-called renaissance.
I thought that downtown, City Hall, would do right by the people. You know, I didn't think they did care less about us.
And built not just by dump trucks and bulldozers and construction cranes, but also by corruption, apathy, and greed.
So I said, okay, if a public official came by today and said, you know, I need $500, what would you do? And he reached into his back pocket and he pulled out five $100 bills.
The man who built this dump had deep ties to Chicago's criminal underworld.
He looked at the owner of the restaurant. He goes, if you don't pay your milk money, you're going to get a pineapple through the window.
He profited at the neighborhood's expense.
Well, no, all the boys at this fucking table. Let's put it on the table here. I made a lot of money over there.
And before he was done, the FBI would be protecting him. I'm Robin Amer. And from USA Today, this is The City.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Let's start at the beginning. Before the dump trucks came, before the lawsuits and the secret FBI tapes, before the arrests and the president's executive order, before the mountain appeared and then disappeared along with the guy who put it there, there was Daley.
You're listening to Richard M. Daley deliver his inaugural address live on WBBM AM from Orchestra Hall.
April 24th, 1989. Chicago's new mayor is sworn into office.
It's time to leave behind old setbacks, disappointments, and battles. Because in the campaign for a better Chicago, we're all allies.
In the 40 years leading up to his inauguration, Chicago had lost nearly a million people, along with hundreds of thousands of jobs. The new mayor, Daley, wanted to stem that tide. He wanted his Chicago to wake up from its post-industrial slumber and thrive.
And we either rise up as one city, or we sit back and watch Chicago decline.
So Daley began a major push to revamp Chicago's aging downtown, paying special attention to the tourist-friendly destinations in the Loop and along the lakefront. He'd go on to renovate Navy Pier with its 150-foot-tall Ferris wheel, expand McCormick Place, the biggest convention center in North America, and build Millennium Park with its big silver bean and Frank Gehry-designed amphitheater. He also set about rebuilding crucial parts of the city's infrastructure, including its roads and highways. Chicago is ringed by highways named for dead politicians: the Kennedy, the Eisenhower, the Stevenson. Millions of cars and 30 years of wear and tear and ice and salt had worn down these aging roadways. By the spring of 1990, the city was full of workers in hard hats and orange vests, breaking down concrete, jackhammering asphalt, gathering up dirt and gravel, loading it into dump trucks and hauling it away. Law-abiding trucking companies carted this debris to distant landfills. But some trucks headed west. They left behind the skyscrapers of the Loop and traveled over the Chicago River into the city's neighborhoods. They drove through Greektown and what was left of Little Italy, past the University of Illinois and the stadium where the Bulls and the Blackhawks play, past the county hospital, to a vacant lot in North Lawndale near the home of Gladys Woodson.
My first memory was the president of the 4100 block came down and asked for Miss Woodson. And I told him, well, what do you want with her?
Miss Woodson was the president of the 4300 block. Together, these block clubs kept eyes on the street and made sure their community was safe.
She said, well, I was told that she was the president of this block, and if I want anything done or help to do, to contact her because she would fight with me. And I say, well, what are we fighting about?
North Lawndale's block clubs banded together to do things like get a new park or keep drug dealers off the corner. That day, they would confront a new challenge.
He said, did you not know that it's a dump, a illegal dump over across the street? And I say, no. He said, come on, let's walk down there.
He walked her to a vacant lot a block from her home.
So what did you see when you went over there with him?
Well, first of all, I saw a lot of trucks lined up blocking the view. And behind the truck, there was a pile of stuff that was accumulating. And it looked like it was a place that they was going to grind up gravel or something.
She watched the trucks roll down the street, belching diesel fumes and kicking up dust. And once the trucks made it to the corner, they would turn and head into the vacant lot, park, tip up their cargo, and dump it.
And so when you saw this line of trucks and this pile of rubble, what did you think?
I think, oh no, we can't have this over here. This is bad for our health, bad for our children, bad for our houses. You know, it's just going to take our neighborhood down.
What Miss Woodson didn't know was that just nine blocks away, there was an even bigger dump. Back in the spring of 1990, if you'd walked out Miss Woodson's front door, past the vacant lot where she saw the dumping, past the train tracks, past convenience stores and gas stations and storefront churches, you'd get to Roosevelt Road and another vacant lot. This one, as big as 13 football fields, or half the size of the Pentagon. And this one was across the street from Sumner Elementary School, where Dolores Robinson taught eighth grade math.
My classroom became room 114, right next to the office. It was on ground level, so I would open the windows in the morning, and you can hear and see. I kept hearing these trucks, these dump trucks.
They were the same trucks Miss Woodson had seen, and they were dumping here, too.
There was bricks and stones and concrete and, you know, iron and just all kinds of construction debris.
The average dump truck can haul up to 24 tons of stuff. And each new truck that came into the lot would add to the pile.
It started to grow. It started to get like a little bump and then a little hill. But I could see a mountain growing.
Miss Robinson had been at Sumner Elementary for more than 20 years. She'd arrived in North Lawndale soon after it changed from a white neighborhood to an almost entirely black one. 100,000 people lived in North Lawndale then. Factory jobs were abundant, and people walked to work at Zenith and Sunbeam and Sears and Roebuck. Back then, there'd also been an enormous tobacco factory across the street from the school.
That building covered blocks. It was a monstrosity of a property.
But during Miss Robinson's first decade at Sumner, North Lawndale lost 80% of its manufacturing jobs and a third of its residents. Companies either closed up shop or moved out to the suburbs, and along with those departures, attention and resources from the city seemed to disappear. In segregated Chicago, North Lawndale felt abandoned by the business community and the city. In 1973, the tobacco company moved to the suburbs and left its building behind.
It was just left there, and within a matter of a few years, it became hollow, you know, the breaking out the windows and taking of fence or iron and scrap, and slowly but surely it deteriorated to an eyesore. It was just, it was horrible.
Neighborhood kids called it ghost town.
So I'm a classroom teacher, and my kids now, I'm predominantly eighth grade, seventh and eighth grade. I said, guys, don't go over across the street to them. Oh, Miss Robinson, we go through there all the time. What? Yeah, we go over there all the time. It's fun going in and out the halls. I said, it's dangerous. You can be hurt. No, we're cool. We're okay.
Miss Robinson once described herself to me as 5 feet tall in sandals, smaller than many of her eighth grade students. But still, she saw herself as their protector.
I said, I'm going to be looking out this window. I better not see one of you, my students, come out of that building. If I see you going in and out that vacant building, you're going to be in trouble with me. I said, and it's because I love you. It's because I care. I don't want you hurt.
But she later heard a story about someone who did get hurt. Miss Robinson remembers him as a boy, 12 or 13, who fell three stories from a fire escape.
It was one of the ladders that you come down. He was on one of those it had rotten and rusted. It swung and it broke and he fell. And he was seriously injured.
Miss Robinson thought of him when she looked out her classroom window that spring day and saw the trucks arrive. She and others had pushed for years to have that factory torn down. And when it finally was, in the mid-80s, it was a victory. A threat to her students, neutralized. But now a new threat, a new form of blight, was coming to take its place.
I started to worry about what is over there and how is it affecting the environment of these kids over here. I said, this is so dangerous for our babies.
How could someone set up an illegal dump across the street from a school and houses and a church? I want you to picture a dump truck pulling up outside your door and dropping 24 tons of busted concrete and rusted rebar and bricks and dirt and sand and then driving away. Then another truck comes and then another. Imagine this pile growing taller than a child, then taller than you. What would you do to stop it? Where would you go for help? Ms. Woodson, the block club president, had lived in a historic graystone since 1970. She'd bought the house after moving to Chicago from her tiny rural hometown of Vance, Mississippi. And in some ways, Chicago couldn't be more different from Vance, which didn't even have electric lights. But for Miss Woodson, her block in North Lawndale was also like a small town. She knew all the neighborhood kids.
And I knew they mama. And, you know, we just sort of grew together.
Miss Woodson and her husband, L.C., had raised their kids and grandkids there. And as president of her block, it was on her to protect it.
You just don't let nobody come in and just take away your livelihood.
So she and her neighbors started staking out the lot to see if they could figure out how to stop the dumping. And as they did, they saw that the trucks kept coming by day and also in the dead of night.
We have come out here like 1, 2 o'clock at night to watch the trucks go in and take down license plates number.
At 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning?
3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And we used to meet them up here because we figured if we can get the license plate number, we can turn them over to the police. So what we did, we started getting license plate number. And what we found, he had one set of plate on the front and a different set of plate on the back.
It seemed really suspicious. And that was before they saw the man in charge.
And any time you see anybody drive over in a vacant lot in a limo, you know it's no good.
Oh my gosh. What did you think was happening back there when you saw him drive up in a limo?
I just thought he was a game banger or something or other. You know, I didn't know what to think.
The man in the limo was a heavy-set white guy with a gruff voice and a receding hairline. His name was John Christopher. And he wasn't just dumping debris in North Lawndale. He was laying bare the city's ugliest divisions and its starkest divides.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Okay, this is a letter that the Southwest United Block Club Council wrote to a lot of people.
Miss Woodson and her neighbors didn't know who John Christopher was yet, but their neighborhood had already been overrun by trucks and debris, and it seemed like the damage could soon be permanent. So following their stakeout, Miss Woodson and 20 of her fellow block club presidents crammed into her living room. Anyone who couldn't fit on the cream-colored sofa spilled into the dining room or sat on the plush carpeted floor. The presidents of the 1500 block and the 4300 block were there, representatives from around the neighborhood. Together, this coalition drafted a letter.
We, the Southwest Lawndale United Block Club councils, are requesting that you intercede for us in protesting the installation of the concrete recycling operation, which is...
They sent the letter to the zoning board and the water department and the Department of Streets and Sanitation. They sent the letter to their aldermen, which is what we call city council members in Chicago. They sent it to the mayor and a member of Congress.
We wrote to everybody from who's who to who's that.
And how optimistic were you, like, in those first few weeks and months that you could deal with this problem and make it go away?
Well, I thought once we contact all of these people and they found out what was going on, that somebody would stop it.
Ms. Woodson was right, at least at first. In June 1990, about a month after receiving her letters, the city finally sent an inspector to check out the lots. And when he got there, the inspector saw piles of debris he'd later describe as taller than you and I, more than 6 feet tall already. So the inspector called his boss and said, "We've got a problem."
People who were working as inspectors in the city called me up and said, "We've got this huge amount of material building up in this particular site."
This is the inspector's boss, a city lawyer named Henry Henderson, who specialized in environmental issues.
It was a huge mountain, and it was across the street from a school. So we got in our cars and went out to visit it, and it was, this is a gigantic issue.
Henry Henderson had learned that John Christopher, the guy Ms. Woodson saw in the limo, was actually running the dumps. So Henderson called Christopher into his office for a meeting. Was that the first time that you had met with him?
Yes.
What did he look like? How did he speak? What impression did he leave on you?
He's a very, very large person. He had one of these incredibly colorful sweaters on, you know?
What, like a Bill Cosby dad sweater?
It kind of like that, yeah. And I was struck by the fact that it looked like he had his nails done.
Going into this meeting, Henderson thought he could demand that John Christopher stop, and that he would. But John Christopher had permits that he'd gotten from the city to operate a rock crusher, a giant machine that pulverizes concrete into gravel, which can then be sold back to construction companies to use in their building projects.
That was his story about what he was doing. And he's particularly aiming at, this is construction debris that can be recycled and I want to crush it. And the material has value. So I'm a recycler and I'm a beautifier. That was his claim as to what his activities were about.
John Christopher was dumping thousands of tons of construction waste across the street from a school and people's homes and businesses. But the way he put it to Henderson, he was helping North Lawndale. You'll hear a lot about John Christopher in this story, but you won't hear from him, at least not yet. I've spent years looking for him, and if he is still alive, he's likely living under a new name. But I'll get into that later. We did talk to someone who did business with John Christopher during this time. This source worked for another local construction company that actually did recycle concrete as part of its business. He didn't want to be named because he wasn't authorized to talk to us and he was afraid of losing his job. He told us that John Christopher owed people money. And we didn't hear it from just this guy. Not long after John Christopher started dumping in North Lawndale, another local construction company sued him in county court, alleging that he owed them nearly $80,000. Then, one day, around the same time, our source gets a call from John Christopher, who says, "Meet me in North Lawndale." So he drives to the lot, and he sees this dump. And at first, he's confused. But then, John Christopher explains. This was how he was going to pay this guy's company back. See, construction companies usually pay to dump in legal, permitted landfills. John Christopher was offering up his lots in North Lawndale as a cheaper alternative. A legal dump charges, say, $150 a load. John Christopher was asking for as little as $10 a load, a figure he'd later admit to in court. He'd allow this guy to dump for cheaper than he would at a real landfill and gradually make up what he owed. John Christopher pitched it as a win-win. He would repay his debts, and the source's company would save a bunch of money by dumping on his sites illegally. And the more all these companies dumped in North Lawndale, the more money John Christopher would make, and the more these construction companies would save. But this guy wanted nothing to do with John Christopher. When he looked around, he saw piles of stuff everywhere, way more than anyone could reasonably crush. And there was stuff that couldn't be crushed, sand, dirt, and rebar. Our source told us that guys like John Christopher give rock crushing a bad name. As the spring of 1990 turned into summer, despite complaints from neighbors and the letter-writing campaign and the visits from inspectors and the meeting with city lawyers, it became clear that John Christopher was not going to stop dumping in North Lawndale. The noise and the dust had gotten worse. Some of Miss Woodson's elderly neighbors relied on oxygen tanks, and the dust was making it harder for them to breathe.
So a group of us, we walked over there to talk to John Christopher, and we asked him, you know, could he stop grinding or whatever he was doing over there? He told us he could do whatever he pleased. And we told him, well, okay, we'll go to court. And he said, if you do go to court, when I leave, I'm going to leave everything just like it is now. He was very arrogant.
When a city gets rebuilt, it puts its new skyscrapers and parks and monuments front and center. It doesn't always want you to see how those things got built or who got hurt in the process.
And so you go over, you meet this guy for the first time, you tell him, hey, we have breathing problems, we have senior citizens, we've got kids, and his response is basically...
So? That was his response, so...
So how did you feel after that confrontation?
Let's get him. Let's go to court.
That's next time on The City. The City is a production of USA Today and is distributed in partnership with Wondery. Our show is reported and produced by Wilson Sayer, Jenny Casas, and me, Robin Amer. Our editor is Sam Greenspan. Ben Austin is our story consultant. Original music and mixing is by Hannes Brown. Additional production by Taylor Macon, Isabel Cockrell, and Bianca Medias. Chris Davis is our VP for investigations. Scott Stein is our VP of product. Our executive producer is Liz Nelson. The USA Today Network's president and publisher is Maribel Wadsworth. Special thanks to Misha Youssef and Daniel Svetkov. Additional support comes from the Fund for Investigative Journalism and the Social Justice News Nexus at Northwestern University. Archival audio, courtesy of WBBM, News Radio 780, and 105.9 FM. If you like this show, you may also like WBEZ's new podcast, On Background, which takes you inside the smoke-filled back rooms of Chicago and Illinois government to better understand the people, places, and forces shaping today's politics. I'm Robin Amer. You can find The City on Facebook or Twitter at The City Pod, or visit our website where you can see photos of our characters and an augmented reality version of John Christopher's dumps. That's thecitypodcast.com.